Could you briefly state for the committee, Mr. McCord, what it was that Mr. Liddy wanted you to do?
I can give a bit of a background if you want that. When he first came aboard the committee in December 1971, he began to... We struck up an acquaintance. We'd had a common background. And he began to question me regarding the state of the art of certain technical devices, for one thing, listening devices and so on. This appeared to be, at that point in time, a professional interest, a normal professional interest of someone who's worked in the field or law enforcement. We discussed as well the common topic of common interest to he and to me and to others who were senior in the staff of the anticipated demonstrations and possible violence that might be coming up in San Diego, California, which was originally scheduled to be the convention site for the Republican convention in 1972 in August. The discussions on
raise
other...
Raise your voice a
yes.
little if you can, Mr. McCord.
The discussions on other matters...
I can interrupt just for a minute, Mr. McCord. I believe it might help. The panel operator might give us some advice in this respect. If you could be a little further away from the microphone and talk a little louder, because we're having a difficult time up here trying to hear you.
I think I'm a bit hoarse. If you could turn up the volume, that might help.
Would you continue?
Yes. Gradually, the discussion in December, January, February 1972 with Mr. Liddy gradually developed into more and more conversation on his part with me in the offices of the Committee for the Re-election of the President regarding technical devices and political matters pertaining to the forthcoming convention. It became apparent that he had an interest in several areas of intelligence gathering pertaining to the Democratic Party and the Democratic Convention, and in which it was contemplated or planned by him and by others whom he referred to in these conversations as John Mitchell, John Dean, counsel to the President, Jeb Magruder, then in January, the interim director of the Committee to Re-elect the President, in which it appeared that those men, the four of them, were in a, by late January, a planning stage in which political intelligence was to be discussed at meetings in the Attorney General's office, Mr. Mitchell's office, and in which Mr. Liddy was seeking from me certain information regarding the costs and the types of electronic devices that could be used in bugging, that a part of the budget proposal which he was working on, a second part dealt with photography operations, clandestine photography operations, and that a third part dealt with the broad area of political espionage, political intelligence.
Well, now specifically, Mr. McCord, when you speak of political activities, political intelligence, bugging activities, what do you mean in terms of how that was to be obtained? Try to be as specific as you can from your knowledge of what Mr. Liddy told you.
The area of political espionage and intelligence, he did not, I can set that one aside pretty quickly, he did not elaborate on in much detail at all to me personally. Apparently others were involved with him, which I can refer to later in the conversation, specifically Mr. Hunt, E. Howard Hunt. The topic of photography, clandestine photography, in which he was preparing a budget and preparing to meet with the gentleman I've referred to before in planning sessions, dealt with photographic equipment and the cost of photographic equipment and specific items of equipment that would be used against the Democratic Party, the Democratic hierarchy in Washington primarily, but also in Miami, Florida. The electronic devices, which he referred to specifically, were of a variety of types.
Well, I'm asking specifically what the types were, but how were they to be used? Where were they to be placed, from your understanding?
The initial interest specified by Mr. Liddy in this regard were, number one, against Mr. Larry O'Brien, then chairman of the Democratic National Committee in Washington, D.C., at his residence and subsequently at his office in the Watergate office building. Perhaps other offices of the Democratic National Committee. The McGovern headquarters in Washington, D.C. were mentioned quite early in 1972. And there was some general reference to the Democratic National Convention facility or site, wherever it might be located, at their convention in the summer of 1972.
Now, Mr. McCord, in connection with this assignment in which you were having these discussions with Mr. Liddy, did you come to associate yourself with Mr. E. Howard Hunt, Bernard Barker, Eugene Martinez, Frank Sturgis, and Virgil Gonzalez?
Yes, I did.
And as a result of that association and your agreement with Mr. Liddy, did you, with Mr. Barker, Sturgis, Martinez, and Gonzalez, illegally enter the Democratic National Committee headquarters on two occasions, one on or about May 30, 1972, and the other in the early morning hours of June 17, 1972?
I did.
On the first occasion, on or about May 30, 1972, did you install two telephone interception devices, or wiretaps, on two office telephones, one on the telephone of Spencer Oliver and the other on the telephone of Lawrence O'Brien?
I did.
Leaving aside for the time being why you broke into the Democratic National Committee headquarters, the Watergate, the second time on June 17, and what circumstances led to your arrest, you were in fact arrested by plainclothesmen of the District of Columbia Metropolitan Police shortly after you entered. Is that true?
That's correct.
And is that arrest which led to your present conviction?
That's correct.
Could you tell the committee, Mr. McCord, why, after a lifetime of work as a law enforcement officer, without, as you've testified, any blemish on your career, did you agree with Mr. Liddy to engage in his program of burglaries and illegal wiretapping, and specifically the two break-ins on May 30 and June 17th at the Democratic National Committee headquarters at the Watergate?
There were a number of reasons associated with the ultimate decision of mine to do so. One of the reasons, and a very important reason to me, was the fact that the Attorney General himself, Mr. John Mitchell, at his offices had considered and approved the operation, according to Mr. Liddy. Secondly, that the counsel for the president, Mr. John Dean, had participated in those decisions with him, that one was a top legal officer for the United States in the Department of Justice, and the second gentleman was a top legal officer in the White House.
Then you say that after the return of the bill of indictment in September down to the last day of the trial, that you are urged to plead guilty, remain silent by a number of people. Did Mr. Hunt ever urge you to plead guilty and remain silent? That is E. Howard Hunt.
Yes, sir.
And Mr. Howard Hunt.
I'm trying to recall, sir, the exact words.
Yes.
The words most frequently used by Mr. Hunt with me was that executive clemency would be available to me.
Yes. How many times did he urge you to plead guilty?
No, sir, I mean to correct that statement. I don't recall Mr. Hunt using those words with me plead guilty.
Did he urge you to not to remain silent?
Not in the exact words, no, sir.
Well, what words did he use, as near as you remember?
He used words to the effect that he used words stating that executive clemency is going to be made available to us. And he spoke in terms as though it already had been committed. I say already as of the time that he first mentioned it to me.
You testified this morning about a meeting in Mr. Mitchell's office. Was there more than one meeting with the Attorney General or only one?
I understood there was more than one.
Talking about in which you personally were involved.
I did not attend, but I was told by Mr. Liddy that there was more than one meeting that took place. I had heard him mention two specifically.
Did you yourself ever attend a meeting in Mr. Mitchell's office any matter?
I attended meetings, yes, in his office at the Committee to Re-elect the President. When he subsequently came over, I visited his offices at the Attorney General's office at the Department of Justice in December on another matter, but not to discuss these particular operations.
How many different visits or conversations have you ever had with Mr. Mitchell?
Numerous, sir.
A dozen, 15, 20, more?
I would guess 15.
Does he know you by your name?
Yes,
individually,
sir.
And you know him?
Yes, sir.
You called him Mr. Attorney General, I presume?
Yes, sir.
What did he call you?
Before June 17th?
Before and after, please.
I haven't seen him since June 17th. He called me Jim, I believe.
He called you Jim, so you're on a first name basis with him.
Did you ever make any effort to bug Senator Muskies or Senator McGovern's headquarters?
Never, Senator Muskies. Senator McGovern's, there was a visit to the office by me, I believe, on three occasions in total, one of which I had some electronic equipment with me, but was never installed because there were other people working there at the time.
In other words, you could never found out any time that the office was empty.
That's correct.
Mr. McCord, in response to a question from Senator Baker, you said that you thought that what you were doing in this operation was legal. Now, of course, you spent some years in the FBI, didn't you?
Yes, sir.
And also in the CIA.
That's correct, sir.
You ran your own security company?
Yes, sir.
You were charged at the trial with seven counts, as I understand, conspiracy, intent to steal property, entering the Democrat National Headquarters, attempted interception of telephone conversations, and attempted interception of oral conversations, as well as possession of a telephone listening device and a oral communications device. Now, is it your testimony that you thought that all of these acts there on June the 17th were legal?
It's my testimony, sir, if I may repeat a portion of it, that the Attorney General had the authority to authorize it it was my experience that he did, in fact, authorize wiretapping and other related activity that were within his purview, that he could and would have turned it down out of hand at the very beginning of the operation itself, if in fact it were clearly and beyond any question illegal. I was advised that it was.
But authorizations by an attorney general for wiretapping are made, of course, in connection with, say, national security cases or crime, trying to find out about organized crime, always in the purview of the attorney general's office. Wasn't this authorization a operation which had to do with the committee to reelect the president? Hasn't that been your testimony this morning?
My testimony was that it appeared to me that this operation was really threefold, that it was set in motion while the Attorney General was Attorney General. Secondly, that the White House was a party to the authorization, justification for the operation, because the counsel to the President had sat in on it. Thirdly, that the Committee for the Re-election for the President was represented in those discussions, and that they may have been the funding mechanism for it. And fourthly, because of the time delay here, and my knowledge of the relationship of Mr. Mitchell with his immediate superior, my conclusion was that his immediate superior approved and set in motion that operation. Therefore, it had all of those implications to me, that it was just not simply the Committee for the Re-election of the President's operation, because it began with the Attorney General while he was the Attorney General.
The activities, though, that you were doing, as I understand this course of events, were supervised by Liddy and Hunt. Is that correct?
They were agents, as I understand it, for the Attorney General and for the White House.
Well, that isn't the question I asked. I said that they were the ones that were supervising and guiding your activities, were they not?
They were the immediate supervisor, but not the
And weren't they supervisor. And weren't they working for the committee to re-elect the president?
Mr. Hunt never did, to my knowledge. I believe there's been testimony to that effect by Mr. Odell.
Who is Mr. Liddy working for during this period of time
Mr.
we're Liddy talking about?
Had two responsibilities. One is general counsel originally for the Committee for the Re-election of the President, and the second one is general counsel for the Finance Committee for the Re-election of the President.
The activities you have described, that is, bugging the Democrat National Committee and photographing, as I understand, documents there, as well as the McGovern and Muskie operations, those all had to do with political campaigning, didn't they?
I think what we haven't discussed here are some of the other things that went into my motivations and to the explanation by Mr. Liddy to me of the reasons for undertaking this operation at the Democratic National Committee, which included electronic photography and those two operations specifically, but the overall operation was not limited to that, either in the original planning or in the authorization by the Attorney General.
Well, did anything you do in this area of bugging and electronic surveillance have anything to do with anybody or any activity other than political campaigning of somebody?
Well, it came into being because of the one of the basic motivations of mine, which
well,
we have
could,
not
could.
Been concerned with, were the violence-oriented demonstrators that we've previously discussed in testimony before this committee.
I don't want to interrupt at a guide, but it would be helpful, Mr. McCord, if you were responsive to the questions. Did you do any electronic bugging or surveillance that had anything to do with anybody or anything that did not involve political activity?
No, sir.
You didn't spy on the Russians or the Chinese or anybody like that? Well, don't you think at some time it might have occurred to you that perhaps these were illegal things and didn't really have anything to do with national security?
Oh, yes. It occurred to me at the time the matters were being planned and being discussed. It's occurred to me since. Yes.
And then why did you go ahead with it?
For the reasons I've... basically the reasons I've stated, but those are not the only reasons. The fact that the Attorney General, the White House itself, and in my personal opinion, the President of the United States, I felt, had set into motion this operation.
In other words, even though...
because of the close relationship of Mr. Mitchell and Mr. Dean, the fact that Mr. Dean worked for the President.
Even though you, if I'm expressing your thoughts correctly, believed it to be illegal or were highly suspicious that it was, nonetheless, because the Attorney General, in your opinion, was ordering this, then you ought to go ahead and do it. Is that a fair thing to say?
Sure, it is a gray area, no question about it. But because the Attorney General, in his position, and because the White House was involved in it, these matters were the matters on which my decision turned. I realized the illegality under normal circumstances, but I also realized that the Attorney General can make matters legal by his signature on a piece of paper or his oral authorization of it, which he does do in domestic subversion cases and in national security cases where electronic surveillance is involved. And it's been done hundreds of times.